I'm here with my correspondent and resident thon maker enthusiast, Logan Colleen.
What is up? I am currently browsing through Will Barton highlights.
Of course you are. Naturally, and I will, no disclaimer, I will say, flat out, we thought about making the motto of this podcast, the only cap is the salary. And that was shot down immediately, for reasons of just distaste and irony. Possible appropriation was a comment from one reader in one test group. But we truck forward. And so like I do want to give a little bit of background on what the premise of luxury tax is about, because every great idea occupies a void. Every great idea occupies a previously unoccupied space. And when you look at the NBA podcast world as it currently resides, I see, and Logan can weigh in here, I see a dichotomy, basically. I see some guys, they're going the like the Max Kellerman Stephen A route, where they say outrageous, ridiculous, just patently untrue things while wholeheartedly believing them to be true. And then on the other side, I see the guys who have gone like the baseball analytics route, like the Moneyball route, and they're sitting there twiddling their thumbs, whacking off underneath their trousers, talking about Jamal Murray's warp and his PER. And shit, we're a whole different thing, which you'll come to see.
No, that's not to say there won't be audacious claims made on this podcast. There actually
Right.
will be, but
Right.
they're gonna have more nuance than a Stephen A. rant about D-Lo's drug use.
Right. So like that, and that's the point I want to bring up is when Stephen A, makes just some outrageous soundbite. The magic of Stephen A is that he wholeheartedly believes the untrue thing that he is saying. We just love saying outrageous shit for the kicks of it, And so like we think you'll appreciate that distinction. All right, so first thing obviously we need to jump in here is the Anthony Davis trade. The Woj bomb dropped yesterday. There's been some nuclear fallout from this particular Woj bomb, as it is the first Woj bomb of the season. What do you think? What do you think?
I wasn't as shocked with the result of the trade as much so as the timing. I thought
Right.
that this was going to happen further into the summer, possibly post draft, possibly even involving the draft, which it will end up doing as the Pelicans obviously acquired that fourth overall pick, which is by itself enough to fulfill most trades. All-star. And so the fact that the Pelicans are not only getting that pick, but two future first round picks, in addition to Brandon Ingram, in addition to Lonzo Ball, in addition to Josh Hart, who has yet to prove himself as a true role player, but had a really nice rookie year. I think that this deal could end up benefiting the Pelicans a just insurmountable level.
Oh yeah.
It could, when this young core combined with Zion could spell a future possible even dynasty in New Orleans. And so,
Jesus. All right, coming out swinging on the first podcast.
yeah.
Talking about dynasty. All right. I'm with you. I'm with you on the timing of this being unexpected. On that note, who the we'll go into the winners and losers of this trade later and speculate, but who the just definitive loser of this trade already is?
LeVar Ball.
Okay, that's I'm sorry. I should have mentioned LaVar Ball. LaVar Ball certainly gets less limelight, but who the real loser is Adam Silver. Adam Silver, like if this trade would have been on draft night, instead of Woj getting to walk down the red carpet and enunciate this to the unwashed masses on Twitter, you would have had Adam Silver in all of his glory, get to announce, and the Pelicans have traded so and so pick, you know? And it would have been Adam Silver and the NBA's moment. And this whole, you know, media clusterfuck would have happened on the NBA's dime, you know, on TNT or on network television. But when it happens on Twitter, all of the clout goes straight to Woj, you know, it's all Woj bomb. And so, like, you know, here at the Luxury Tax, we don't like to speculate, but I would go ahead and say that Woj is in cahoots with the Lakers, the Pelicans, the star players, whoever. You know, I think
Probably Rich Paul. I would say definitely Rich Paul.
I absolutely. Like I think, like, you know how, like, you know, like the Toronto Raptors kind of came out and named Drake their like unofficial ambassador. I feel like Woj is at a point where it's almost ridiculous that he doesn't have an official appointed position with the league. Like, he is an institution of the NBA.
I think the fact that all of this happens behind closed doors is the only reason that he has been able to obtain the amount of power that he has.
Right. He has like a diplomatic immunity. Sorry for the other no, more Drake references. I get three Drake references per podcast. That was the
Ooh.
allotment agreed upon.
I don't think I ever signed off on
Shh. Quiet.
that. All
No,
right.
but
But back to the trade. I want to talk about the Lakers side of things for a little bit
right.
because it's cool that you got AD and all. You have probably the most interesting, probably the best duo in the NBA with KD sidelined next year and Klay sidelined next year. But as we saw this year with the Lakers, if you do not surround that with pieces that can not only shoot but also defend at a high level, it doesn't matter that LeBron and AD will go off every night. It's not going to matter. They're going to need bench depth. But more importantly, they're going to need to surround LeBron with shooters. It's not like AD is hitting at a 40% mark with volume. And right now you have Reggie Bullock who's going into free agency, Rondo free agency, JaVale free agency. So
Oh,
the
don't
only
forget Beasley. Don't forget Beasley.
Yeah, Beasley. Didn't he just like quit basketball? I think he just quit.
There's always a comeback on the horizon. Always a
Maybe
comeback on the
in
horizon.
China. I want to see China Beasley again.
Oh, dude, I'd love to see. Here's my all-time China lineup. I want to see Jimmer Fredette. You know that? Who was that? Was it Russ Smith who went to Louisville, who's like 5'7", but averaged like 50 points a game for
Oh,
like
yeah, he
the
was 50
Beijing
a game.
Tigers? Right. So we got Russ Smith. We got JR. We got Beasley and Jimmer. That's and then just some, like,
Don't
you
forget,
know.
didn't Stoudemire have a decent career overseas? Or was it
We talking about Damon or Amari?
No, Amari. Was it there's a former Knick that won overseas?
I think it's I thought it was JR. Oh, Marbury. You're thinking of
Oh,
Marbury.
Stephon, it
No,
was
yeah.
Marbury.
No,
Mar no.
Stephon Marbury fucked around and basically made that huge push with that Starbury shoe. Like, it was that $25 basketball shoe that went absolutely global and then up and moved to China.
He was just the gold standard for American athletes gone overseas for like a good decade. He has statues in China.
Wow, shout out Marbury. What a strange career he had. I feel like he's like both weirdly respected and disrespected at the same time.
Yeah, but I mean the fact that he saw the writing on the wall and I don't want to name names, but I think Carmelo
Don't I knew where this was headed.
I think Carmelo could have also seen that writing on the wall and made a really good career out of himself, late career in
Shit,
China.
I'm not even sure Melo could play in China at this point. I'm
Yo.
not, you know,
Dude,
Melo
Jimmer.
might have to go to New Zealand, to be honest with you. He might have to go to Papua New Guinea, play on the Papua New Guinea national team. You know, JJ Barea was talking about, you know, him joining. Was it I think it was like the Cuban national team, or what was the? And I was just like, do you really want him? You know, that's, I mean, It's like the inverse of 3 and D. There's no 3 and there's no D. It's like the
Yeah,
I don't know.
his game is not like conducive to EuroLeague whatsoever.
I'm not even sure his game is conducive to the sport of basketball. But no, Melo jokes aside, I do want to dig into what this Lakers roster is going to look like. And central to that question is the more pressing question is Rob Pelinka a psychopath? Is he capable of making real decisions? Does he actually have any power? Or did LeBron pull the strings on this? Did Jeannie Buss pull the strings on this? Did Magic Johnson actually pull the strings on this? Did Jerry West,
Is
who the
Magic
fuck?
Johnson still secretly employed?
That, no, right. Did you see them? You saw the Magic tweet, right?
I did not.
Magic tweeted, "Great deal, Rob Pelinka. Job well done." Some shit like that. And everybody on Twitter was like, "Oh, was this like a snide sort of cutting remark, or was this sincere?"
Or
And
did
of
he?
course, Magic, who knows?
Or it was supposed to be go on his Colangelo burner account, but he accidentally tweeted out his certified accounts.
Update to the Ringer article. This whole time, Magic Irving Johnson was running the Brian Colangelo burner account. His wife was framed. My fucking column. Hire me at the Ringer. No, that's preposterous. But hey, but like this Lakers roster, it's gonna get done. Whether it's good or bad, I don't know. But first of all, we got to figure out who the fuck's running the show. But second of all, Trill Withers of Mixtape tweeted the other day, and I totally agree with it. In wake of this, in wake of this monster deal, he said, "Give me the stars, and we'll figure out the rest later." And I think in the modern NBA, a lot of the roster architect, nerdy stats people, they'll be in my DMs for this. But hey, give me the stars, we'll figure out the rest later.
No, and I agree to a certain extent with that, but when you have a front office that has proven time and time again to be as dysfunctional as the Lakers, that's a dicey game that you're playing. Because figuring out the rest could mean signing Lance Stephenson to an $8 million deal,
Oh,
and
right.
you're left with playing Alex Caruso for 40 minutes a game through the month of like March. Not to take anything away from Caruso. He played outstanding for a
Caruso's
good
been a
2 weeks
hell of a
there.
player.
And him and Mo Wagner are like the only two players outside of, I think, like Isaac Bonga that are retained next year. Everyone else is up
Yeah,
for free
I didn't
agency.
realize Bonga actually got a weird like 3 year extension from, and he didn't even play a minute. They must just love Bonga.
I watched some G League highlights on him. He's still really like gangly and sometimes doesn't seem to have the best understanding of the game, but other times his vision is really, really pokes out. His shot's still coming along, but like he's still 2 years away, at least.
Jeez. Don't
But
bring up the Bruno Caboclo 2 years away from being 2 years away.
no. Bonga is not Kaboko. Bonga has real skills.
I know, I believe that. When I watched Bonga in Summer League, I thought his comp was Okobo. I thought him and Okobo were kind of similar players, and that one of them would emerge as a valuable talent. Is Fee still is he still kicking on the Lakers? Have they given up on him yet or not?
No, remember they traded him to the Pistons for Reggie Bullock.
Fuck, you're right. And yeah, we'll see if they re-sign Bullock. The big question for them though, beyond they'll get shooting around LeBron. They'll figure it out. They're not 4 year olds. The Cavaliers got shooting around LeBron, and they're actually 4 year olds. So the big
Okay,
question
so
is the point guard, Is it going to be Rondo? Are they getting Chris Paul? Are they getting Kemba? What's going on?
as of this morning, the rumor mill was twirling that Kyrie has wanted to play with AD for a long time.
Name
Do
your
you have
fucking sources. Would you need to reveal your sources?
Can I say, how about we go Shams for this one?
Let's get off the Woj
trade. How about just throw it a Shams there?
It feels like it stinks of Perez, but we'll see.
Worldwide Woj. No, but I think that after this AD signing, their main goal is obviously a point guard acquisition, preferably a star point guard. And I think if they don't land Kyrie or Kemba, then most likely will re-sign Rondo. And I think probably go after a guy like Darren Collison.
Yeah. No, I could see the Collison happening. I think ultimately, like, there's a reason beyond AD that they felt like they could part.
Yeah. I think that beyond the drama involving LeVar, beyond Lonzo's injury, I think that having a point guard with not an inability to shoot the three, but just such an inconsistent shot and no real signs of it improving substantially in the long term is scary, especially when you have a 2 to 3 year window to win a championship here with LeBron.
Yeah, so I'm with you. I think the ultimate truth is that the Lakers believed in Lonzo's potential. I think Magic, Pelinka, LeBron, I think their leadership did. But, you know, there's no crystal ball. You know, there's no genie in a bottle which can tell you, no pun intended with the genie, that Lonzo's shot is ever going to get there. You know, you want Lonzo's shot to get there. The media wants Lonzo's shot to get there. Everyone wants Lonzo's shot to get there, but no one's sure if it will. And the release is funky. The footwork is funky. The arc is funky. And I think the word that you used is inconsistent. And that's, you know, that's the quintessential. I mean, that's the truth.
Yeah. And I think that in terms of assembling this roster, the main goal is to target a point guard that is not only a star, but can get that 40% clip from three or around there. And when you're talking Kyrie and Kemba, you're talking about guys that, other than Curry and Lillard, are probably the next two best shooters at the point guard spot in the NBA. And so you're going to see the Lakers courting them heavily. And if neither of those guys work out, then, like I said, I think a guy like Darren Collison would be a good fit. And that, I guess, would be like the B scenario in which they target another big name like Tobias Harris to fill that shooting void. Because they need a volume three-point shooter to surround LeBron with. And they just did not have that guy last year. Kuzma took a lot of threes. I think he ended up with, what, like a 34-35% mark from three. And that's just not going to do it for you when you're talking about LeBron, who's not an outstanding three-point shooter. He takes a lot of difficult shots, but you need a guy who is going to absolutely fill it from you from deep in order to make a championship run.
Oh, agreed. I mean, I think not only do the Lakers need a point guard who can shoot, they need that what you're saying, the guy who can come in and take, you know, 7 to 8, maybe even 10 three-pointers a game. And, you know, and is throughout the game, whether he's hot or cold, is coming off screens, is spotting up, you know, is just really confident with his stroke. I mean, like, you know, we both love Seth Curry. Seth Curry is unrestricted. Wayne Ellington's unrestricted. I could see them bringing back Bullock because Bullock, like, at times showed flashes of being that guy in Detroit. You know, like, a kind of a wild card option is Austin Rivers played really, really good playoff minutes with Houston this year, and that gets overlooked. Now, is that the personality? You know, I'm seeing flashbacks to the D'Lo era in LA. Do you want Austin Rivers on the Lakers? I don't know, but you know, you do have options.
Now, we're talking about good fits here. So I have my list of good fits, and I have my list of great fits.
And okay, go ahead.
The theme here is kind of 3-and-D, obviously, when you're talking about assembling around LeBron and AD. And so Bogdanović is unrestricted, I believe.
Bohan. We're talking.
Yes, Bohan. Not
to clarify for the viewers at home.
Bohan is unrestricted. Rudy Gay, who shot over 40% from three last year for, I believe, the first time in his career, is unrestricted. Trevor Ariza, he's getting up there in age, but still one of the premier, like, medium volume 3-and-D players in the league. Mirotić is unrestricted, very streaky, but can absolutely get it done from deep. Quick feet at the four. Wesley Matthews is unrestricted. He's another guy who's streaky, slightly above average 3-point shot, but he's definitely a threat. And as a veteran, most defenses respect that. And
he put in good playoff minutes with the Pacers this year too.
Yeah, and I love that you mentioned Wayne Ellington, because I think that you can almost run your second unit against him or around him, and he can even give you minutes deep in the playoffs if you see that run. He's a veteran. He knows how to lead a team. And that year with the Heat, was it 2 years ago where they made that run where they fell like one game short of the playoffs? They literally built their second unit around Ellington, and it worked out really well for them. They had one of the best benches in the league.
Yeah, Ellington, the weird thing about Ellington is he's not only a capable three-point shooter, but he's got really savvy basketball instincts, mm-hmm. which is kind of why you can rely on him in the second unit. I think he's an underrated talent. In terms of, you know, like their free agents that they might look to re-sign, like Muscala is an option, albeit not a great one. I like Bullock. I don't love Bullock. I thought he faded at times once he got traded. But like back to the point guard scenarios, Rondo shot and for the past 2 years has actually shot, you know, above average from 3-point land. I want to say it was, you know, above 34 somewhere, 35, 36 around there.
Yeah, and again, it's not high volume. It's a lot of corner threes. It's a lot of kickouts.
Wide the fuck open.
Yeah, like, absolutely. But that's not to take away from the fact that he's drastically improved that in almost a kid-esque way. Not quite to that level, obviously, but we could see even him improve more so at that. You know who else has taken a step forward from threes? Ricky Rubio.
I was going to bring up Rubio's availability, because that's definitely an option.
If the whole Kemba or Kyrie, I think you have to look at that as plan A, and then everything else is plan B.
Well, right, because, I mean, okay, so when we look at the 3-point percentages of a guy like Rubio, a guy like Rondo, and another free agent that's getting some buzz with the Lakers is Beverly. Like, if you go into the film and you actually watch these games, a great majority of these threes that they're making are threes where it's kind of a late in the shot clock or a broken play, and the atmosphere is, hey, I dare you to shoot this.
It's,
you know, there's not a hand within 5 feet of you.
They're not even in rhythm shots. It's like what you're practicing in the pregame warm-up.
Yeah.
Just
right. It's like a YMCA sort of, like, you can take a couple dribbles beforehand, shine your shoes, look down, you know.
Exactly.
Like, and so I don't know if I trust those percentages, especially if teams start keen on that and being like, hey, maybe we should guard this guy. Maybe he's for real.
So the next thing I want to talk about in terms of Lakers roster assemblage is kind of that 4/5, because ideally you kind of play a small ball with AD at the 4 or 5, and you kind of interchange that with like an almost a Draymond archetype. And I think that rumor has it that Al Horford is attempting to kind of redo his contract with the Celtics.
Oh my god.
But I think that if the Lakers get him on a 1-year deal, that could be a really nice fit next to AD and LeBron as a just premier front court, probably one of the best in the league.
I love it. You know, I love it, you know, and I can see how it materializes. I just think it's a pipe dream, because I think that Brad Stevens is a man who knows where his bread is buttered, you know?
True.
Right. I think Brad Stevens has absolutely maximized Horford's savvy and his offensive instincts. And I think Horford, to an extent, knows that. So, like, I think even if Kyrie doesn't resign and the Celtics are in sort of a weird spot, I think Horford's going to opt into that player option, because he's carved out such a comfortable and effective role in that offense. But no, I'd love Horford. The other the other sort of Draymond archetype, like guys who could come in and do the little things, pass off the key, pass from the elbows, pass in transition. Underrated name, Maximilian Kleber is a good player.
Is he a free agent though?
Maximilian Kleber is an unrestricted free agent.
Really? I didn't know that.
That's right.
I thought you were going in the El Farouk Aminu direction, but I like how you threw Kleber in there.
Yeah, no, I think Farouk Aminu will go down with a ship in Portland. Like I think he's on the good side of Dame. Like he'll just kind of stay there. But I like Kleber. Kleber's got a great stroke from deep. Him and Doncic played off each other a lot when they were in, and their numbers were good. That's an option. Nerlens is an option. Rashawn Holmes is an option.
Bobby Portis is an option.
No, okay, we're talking about Fitz personality, right? Bobby Portis will come in, and there will be Twitter headlines out the wazoo. I mean.
Do you remember when Bobby Portis just threw a haymaker at Mirotić 2 years ago? Was that last year? No, that was 2 years ago.
Dude, he broke Mirotić's nose. Mirotić was out for like months.
Oh, and I guarantee it was just a one punch, just like uppercut right to the eye. There's no way. It was just one hard punch.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised if he was unconscious on the court and everyone was just kind of staring around looking at their sneakers. But hey, I mean, Bobby Portis could punch out Rob Pelinka for all I care. Bobby Portis is a thug. You know, that's just the plain and simple. And I love it.
There's few guys that I'm legitimately afraid of if I'm an NBA player to play against. One of them is Montrezl Harrell. The other one is Bobby Portis.
Okay, see, Trez, you know, listen, Trez is a physical specimen, but I can see Trez going home and, like, rocking his little child on his knee while, you know, like, singing lullabies and reading children's books. Bobby Portis has the crazy eyes.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you can do about the crazy eyes. The crazy eyes are in your nightmares.
True. He is an insane person.
I mean, his eyes, they are cartoonish. I mean, they are bugging out of his goddamn head.
Just staring into your soul.
Yeah. No, that's the truth.
You're talking about just general, like, chaotic big men. I think Thad Young could be a nice fit in LA as well. You don't have the shooting there, but the playmaking for Thad just the last like 2 years has been next level. I mean, he's been a really underrated piece for that team, and one of the main reasons that they've been able to see success with Oladipo injury, everything else.
No, right. I'm with you. Thaddeus Young is vastly underrated, especially in his playmaking ability. I do wonder when his father time year will come, because I feel like. Like he's really getting up there, and you don't want to buy in on a year where his production just goes south because just the knees start to creak.
No, yeah, I agree, and I think that what the Lakers are going to do with these role players is a lot of 1 year deals, similar to what they did this year.
Yeah,
because they want sample sizes where that if LeBron and AD do not like playing with them. That they're out next year and they're starting over. They don't want to be committed to anything that is not going to fit seamlessly into the system that they're going to work out around this core.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Now I do want to transition into this the Pelicans end of this and kind of where their roster development goes from here now that they've basically been rebirthed from the shackles of the Anthony Davis hostage situation. they have all kinds of options right now. I mean, I'm looking at, so here's who they got signed right now. They got Drew on deck. You know, that's a little bit up in the air, but he's on deck. Solomon Hill, Etuan Moore, who shot 43% from three last year. That didn't get a lot of press.
Wow.
Yeah. Christian Wood, no comment. We're not diving into that. We could spend, a good 3.5 hours just scorching earth
as
about the behemoth that is Christian Wood. Yeah, you know, we have a serious sort of compulsive issue when it comes to Christian Wood, and we don't need to spread our dirty laundry on this great podcast. Frank Jackson is signed for another year. He barely scraped the bottom of the barrel with 30% from 3-point land last year. And I mean, I'll be honest. I watched a decent amount of Pelicans games, and first of all, their bench was abysmal. Cheick Diallo did not show a single even shred of competence at any point. Frank Jackson really never looked comfortable out there. He got some shots up, but it was just always like him struggling with the rhythm on offense, kind of ball holding, kind of ball stopping. And then they got player options on Ja and
You
Bertans,
know who
and they're free agent.
you're forgetting?
Who?
Kenny Williams, the undrafted rookie out of TCU.
You mean no? You're talking about Ke no. I Kendrick Williams.
Kendrick, not
It's
Kenny.
yeah,
Kendrick
Kendrick
Williams.
Williams.
Kendrick Williams
They signed him,
quietly
didn't
had a
they?
really good post All-Star break off the bench for the Pelicans.
Yeah, no. I saw they gave him a pretty decent
Did
contract.
they?
It was like, yeah, I think he's getting like, I think he's making like it was like 1.8 a year for 2 more years, and he wasn't even in the first round, was he?
No, he was undrafted.
Yeah. Yeah,
He's not afraid to shoot the ball at all.
you've been high on him for a while, so I'll give credit where credit is due there.
No, and like obviously, as any undrafted, you have a lot of ups and downs, and I think you're gonna see a lot of turnover prone basketball out of him if he continues to solidify that bench role. You're gonna see a lot of indecisive basketball, but he can really shoot it from deep, and he has a lot of confidence in that stroke. It's a good looking stroke. He has the length, he has the athleticism to really be a good on ball defender. He rotates well. Like, I think they have a solid piece there going forward.
For sure, and I mean, we'll see how it matriculates as the pieces start flowing at the start of the year. What I'm really curious is just like what obviously jumps out is the absolute just lunar eclipse possibilities that one can imagine between Zion and Lonzo. I mean, if we look at the Pelicans last year, that offense actually got up and down the floor, especially with Julius Randle going just satanic aggression post All-Star break. Elfrid Payton, who in this correspondent's opinion is actually not good at basketball, had a legitimate 5 triple-double in a row streak.
No way.
Yeah,
I don't buy it.
right. And so like if Elfrid Payton can have 5 triple-doubles in a row on the
Is
Pelicans
that
last
from
year.
Barry McConkner's Twitter?
No. This has all been vetted. This has been sourced and cited. This is the whole 9 yards. Elfrid Payton had 5 triple-doubles in a row. So I'm saying,
Wow.
if Elfrid Payton can do that, like, what the hell is Lonzo capable of?
No, I totally agree. And in terms of like the complete different ends of the spectrums of body types between Zion and Brandon Ingram, it is gonna be hilarious to watch these two on the court together.
Oh yeah. Oh, hell yeah.
I mean,
it's like if you're watching like insect basketball and you got like a praying mantis and then just a Goliath beetle.
I love the
For all
analogy.
my entomologists out there, of which there are many, I assume, listening.
But yeah, I think that in terms of just the lob threat of Zion alone, or of Zion alone from Zoe, you can generate awesome transition offense from there. We know Lonzo loves playing in transition. We know Zion loves playing in transition. We know Bingham likes to pull up on the break. I mean, you could see a very, very quick, fast-paced offense in New Orleans next year. And in terms of defense, really unpredictable. We don't know what we're going to see there yet. What kind of scheme, personnel defensively is iffy. But I do know that Zion will most likely deliver something on the defensive end just from a physical standpoint alone.
Oh no, Zion could do like what the Pacers did in their heyday with like the Paul George and George Hill team, where it was like, hey, Greg Monroe's our defense. Everyone else just focus on putting the basketball in the rim. Like Zion, I think he's that type of like transcendent talent where like he can go from, like shutting down a backside shooter on the perimeter to just glassing the shit out of a layup at the rim in, you know, in 0.5 seconds. You know,
yeah,
and
it's absurd. It is absurd.
No, and Lonzo to Zion YouTube montage has the potential to be what the early Clippers Chris Paul, DeAndre Jordan, Blake Griffin YouTube montages were.
Or going back further, the Penny Hardaway to Shaq.
You were not alive, sir. You were not alive. You're getting this from an ESPN 30 for 30. Okay, let's
so be it.
Jesus. No, but to your point about Ingram, like, and I've said this from the beginning. I've gone on tirades, rants, the whole nine yards about this. What the Lakers tried to do with trying to like use Ingram as a marketing tool by when LeBron was out, trying to make LeBron and Lonzo were out, trying to make him like the sole initiator and the sole creator on offense. That was disastrous. That made him look horrible. That is not who he is. He simply does not have that vision. He's a fun player, and he's got a ton of room to grow. He's got a ton, but like Ingram's ceiling is a poor man's Durant. You know, his ceiling is not
like
a point forward.
How poor are we talking?
like I'm talking like cardboard cutout, like. But like, I mean, hey, cardboard cutout Durant is still a valuable chip on any team. You know, like, I mean, what is Kevin Durant? Let's be real.
Absolutely. And a player comp for Ingram is hard because we haven't seen very many players with not only a style of play, but just that body type and the ability to craft his own offense, but not to the extent where he can be a true number one or number two guy on a championship team.
Well, the thing is, we've seen it in spurts. You know, you'll be watching a Lakers game, and you'll see, like, five or six possessions in a row where it's like, oh, Ingram, pull up 18-footer, bang. Ingram, great, offensive rebound, right back and up. Ingram, corner three. And then Lakers Twitter is just going crazy, sacrificing their children, you know, like the whole thing. And then, you know, the next quarter, oh, Ingram turnover. Ingram turnover again. Oh, Ingram, fadeaway 18-footer, clanks off the back iron. Oh, Lakers are down 12. You know, like,
yeah, exactly.
That's just the way his game has been so far. But
I think that if you surround him with a more stable environment, I think part of just the unpredictability of Ingram's game can be attributed to the absolute dumpster fire that was happening in LA last year.
Yeah.
And I think that if the Pelicans make the right moves this round, like Drew Holiday is a very consistent piece there. I feel like he can provide some good veteran leadership to keep things stable and not let Ingram get too out of control.
Oh, no, dude, Drew Holiday is a consummate professional. You know, Drew Holiday is as stable of a dude as there is in the NBA, and I don't think he gets enough credit for that. One of the big question marks on this Pelicans team right now is, today I just saw the news that Julius Randle opts out of his $9 million deal, which, you know,
predictably,
by all means, he outperformed the living hell out of that $9 million. I mean, he should go and maximize the American dream. I mean, give him $20 million a year. I don't give a shit. Julius Randle's an animal.
I 100% agree. And I think it's going to be harder for the Pelicans to retain him. Does he want to play New Orleans? I don't know. Is the Zion Julius Randle front court going to be too congested? Possibly.
Yeah, no, I don't think him opting out says anything about whether or not he wants to stay. I think it just says that, hey, I'm worth a lot more than $9 million.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, and I know you're going to hate this question because it comes in the first take Max Kellerman sort of vein, but, you know, who do you think won this trade, first impression?
Yeah, so that question alone, it is absolutely erroneous in nature. And I'm going to tell you why.
Jesus.
Attempting to pick the winner of a trade is an absolute fool's errand. If you think back to 2-3 years ago when OKC made the trade for Paul George, what was the initial reaction in the media? Oh, highway robbery. Even the OKC police department was tweeting about it. It was that big of a deal. OKC is going to win a championship. This is the greatest deal in NBA history. Ah. And what happened? Oh, Oladipo turned out to be an all-star. Sabonis turned out to be one of the best, most promising young bigs in the NBA.
Yeah.
Oh, all of a sudden the tables have turned. The turntables.
Now, is that a Michael Scott reference?
That is a Michael Scott reference.
Jesus.
Snap back this year. All of a sudden, Oladipo goes down with a severe injury. Paul George re-signs. Paul George has an MVP caliber year. Now what are you looking at? Okay, people are leaning towards OKC winning that trade again. So when you make that initial judgment and then you flip-flop, the amount of cognitive dissonance it takes in order to retrace your steps and stray away from that initial judgment, it's just ludicrous. So instead of doing that, I'm going to take the trade for what it is, which is mutually beneficial, and I'm going to see where it goes from here.
The truth is, I think you pretty much echoed all my thoughts on preemptively judging who wins trades. It's a fool's errand. It's an exercise in all sorts of hindsight bias and confirmation bias. I also think it's really accentuated by the hot take culture and just like, prisoner okay, you know. Oh, right. And if you're working in basketball journalism, how do you generate viewership? How do you generate clicks? You say something that's decisive. You say something that is editorial. And, you know, for someone to come out and say, oh, hey, you know, the Lakers gave up way too much, or, oh, Anthony Davis isn't worth this much, or, oh, the Pelicans absolutely right. You know, it's, you don't know shit. You know, you are just trying to get the likes.
Especially for this trade, when almost every player involved has such a proclivity towards injury that 1 year from now, we can be looking at AD, career-ending injury, Brandon Ingram, pulmonary emboli, Chris Bosh disease. Like, we don't know what the hell is going to happen. And so for someone to come out and say that the Lakers are a future dynasty, the Pelicans got a steal, like, it's truly ludicrous. And we have no idea what's going to happen. And I think it's just more fun if we let it play out and enjoy the basketball next year.
All right. Well, you said it best. We'll let it play out. And thanks for tuning into Luxury Tax. We'll see you guys next week.
Thanks for tuning in to the first pilot episode of Luxury Tax. Catch us every Wednesday for a new episode, as well as other content on the Lead Sports Media Podcast Network.
Yeah, and don't forget to tune in to the greatest gladiatorial event and secular holiday that this great nation has to offer, the NBA draft. We'll see you next week with some post-draft coverage. And that's a wrap. Have a good morning.